everyone. Welcome to Careers Without 4 Years. My name is Melanie Dunn. I'm a workforce development professional, and I want to help you guys find out where the opportunity is in today's job market for great careers that don't require 4-year degrees. And the good news is, that's 50% of the job market. You'll hear from professionals in manufacturing, the trades, healthcare, tech, and many other industries. And we'll also explore how to find affordable or even free training. So today we're going to talk about how to stay in school. Now, this is not known by the general public, I think, but most people drop out of college or any degree program that they're in or certification. And the reasons for these that have been studied are threefold. Most people drop out because they run out of money. That's about 36%. About 30% drop out because they're not ready or able to do the academic work required. And the remainder of students drop out because they may have family pressures at home or emotional pressures that just make it a bad time for them to be in school. But I was speaking to my friend and colleague, Evelyn Van Til, and I realized that there might be something more to this that could really help you stay in school. And it has nothing to do with money or emotions or your academic proficiency, at least not in a straightforward way. What it does have to do with, though, is an innate capability and desire, I believe, in all people, which is to help one another. My guest today is Evelyn Van Til, offering students that averaged 2.2. In 2 years, she moved retention to 91% and GPAs to 3.2 on average, with graduation rates dropping from an astonishing average of 7 to 9 years to complete to a really healthy 4 to 5 years. So today she's agreed to come on the show, talk about her success, and help you employ some of the techniques she used to help students stay in school and earn their degrees. Evelyn, welcome to the show. So today we're going to talk about how to stay in school. Now, this is not known by the general public, I think, but most people drop out of college or any degree program that they're in or certification. And the reasons for these that have been studied are threefold. Most people drop out because they run out of money. That's about 36%. About 30% drop out because they're not ready or able to do the academic work required. And the remainder of students drop out because they may have family pressures at home or emotional pressures that just make it a bad time for them to be in school. But I was speaking to my friend and colleague, Evelyn Van Til, and I realized that there might be something more to this that could really help you stay in school. And it has nothing to do with money or emotions or your academic proficiency, at least not in a straightforward way. What it does have to do with, though, is an innate capability and desire, I believe, in all people, which is to help one another. My guest today is Evelyn Van Til. Evelyn is a strategic partnership manager at American Student Assistance, a nonprofit changing the way middle and high schoolers learn about careers and navigate education and career opportunities. Evelyn has a BA in English and Classical Studies from Illinois State University and a master's degree in English from The Ohio State University. She's also certified in leadership and strategic management by Cornell University, in business and life empowerment coaching by IPEC, and as a strengths coach by Gallup Clifton Strengths. She's also passionate about creating access to education. So, During her tenure working at Ohio State, Evelyn achieved something I thought was astounding. She turned dropout figures on their head. Starting with a first-year average dropout rate of 90% and a GPA for entering students that averaged 2.2, in 2 years, she moved retention to 91% and GPAs to 3.2 on average, with graduation rates dropping from an astonishing average of 7 to 9 years to complete to a really healthy 4 to 5 years. So today she's agreed to come on the show, talk about her success, and help you employ some of the techniques she used to help students stay in school and earn their degrees. Evelyn, welcome to the show. If you could just give us some more of the story of how you did this amazing thing.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's great to be here. I think there's a lot that institutions can do in terms of making impact student success metrics. And happy to share a little bit about what I did in terms of enrollment management, partnership, and pedagogy. Those are kind of the three buckets that I would put the initiatives that I was utilizing in. And when I'm talking about enrollment management, that really can encompass a number of different things, but student access to coursework, the correct coursework, the coursework relevant to their major, relevant to their progress in their program, cohorting that can help establish community and build connections that are really powerful, and I cannot underestimate the impact that that really has on student success. Partnerships, that's internal to the university. Oftentimes, programs at the university, academic units, may not be working in coordination with student life, housing, and other units, including admissions and financial aid. So independent decisions are being made that inadvertently impact student experience, and administrators are just unaware of how those decisions can sometimes play out. And pedagogy, really understanding and meeting students where they are and providing the kind of resources that they need to make it through the programs. Happy to drill down into those big buckets, but those are really overarchingly the elements that comprise the first year programs that I worked on. We had, you know, as you said, some really terrible numbers in terms of student GPA, student retention, and student success, and had caught the attention of people in places to make the changes, and decided to move from an open enrollment to a direct enrollment to connect, to make an emotional connection between the academic units that students wanted to be in and the units that served them. Prior to that, students went into a kind of general pool where they made an effort to get into these academic units, but without the guidance of those academic units, often didn't take the right courses, didn't get connected to faculty, weren't able to make really meaningful use of their first and second years of study mm-hmm. in the university. Kind of floundered in direction and way. And that led to suppression in GPA, which limits their ability to make it into competitive academic programs, to graduate, and oftentimes to find those competitive internships or other co-ops that may have, you know, requirements.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but sort of the way I see the way college or programs are set up is often sort of like a la carte. Like you're at a diner and you look at a menu and you just try your best to put enough on your plate that it's going to like carry you from one semester to the next. But really, people need a more student-centered design of their studies also so they can make connections to one another, right? That help them
absolutely
navigate successfully the academics. Can you tell us something more about that?
Absolutely. I would point specifically to orientation as a common experience that many of us went through, where if it was anything like what I experienced, you got a course offerings bulletin book, and an incomprehensible list of numbers. You're trying to find courses that are still open. You have no idea really what to do or how to do it. Not a lot of guidance. And it's an exhausting day, bewildering day. And I think that experience is really powerful in terms of driving what I did, turning it around and saying, that's not the experience I want our students to have. I do not want to hand them a course offerings bulletin book and say, go to, have fun, figure it out, throw you in the deep end of the swimming pool and hope you manage to come up for air. I want that to be the last thing on your mind. I want you to feel good about the decision you made in enrolling in our programs. I want you to feel really welcomed to the environment. I want people to be making connections with each other, friendships that may be forged in orientation that carry over into the academic year and the enrollment, where you may even find roommates or housing together. You may find classmates that are study buddies or can help you make those, make success in that first really transitional time where your anchors that you may have had in high school or your previous school are no longer there, and you're having to really reset your entire structure, your entire ability to navigate. And I want to create a space where students were empowered to make decisions. They were not spoon-fed anything, but at the same time, there was no need to stress people out and throw them in the deep. We know what courses students needed, and there's no reason to, not curate the list of courses to choose from more appropriately than handing someone the course offerings bulletin book. And what I did is very much create little worksheets for students based on their major, based on their test results, based on whatever profile information I had in their admissions notes, and creating little suggestions for what they can do, and smoothing that process out so that they're looking not at everything that they could ever study in the course offerings bulletin, which is hugely overwhelming, right? But more specifically based on, okay, this very first academic enrollment, what are we looking at you doing? And making sure that the preponderance of coursework is aligned with their academic interests and skills. So that if they're coming in and they say, I want to be a so-and-so kind of major, I want to be in this program or that program, that we got them the coursework that aligned with those interests and were a good cadence of coursework so that students, if they're coming in and they're an art major, that they're getting a photography class, a drawing course, that they're getting a humanities course, that if they're coming in and they're saying, I want to be a designer, and that they're getting coursework for that. If they're coming in and they say, I want to be in theater, or I want to be in humanities, I want to be going towards business, that there's coursework that's directly tied to that aspiration, that they see the value of that coursework, and then they can test drive it. And see, okay, you think that you want to do this thing? Let's test drive it. Let's get you in those courses very, very much at the beginning. And if it works, you're going to have a great, you're going to see the results on GPA, right? Students who enjoy the courses tend to do much better at them than coursework that they don't see, a reason to be in and doesn't connect to their long-term goals.
I think what you did was also make sure people knew we're taking classes together, right?
Absolutely. So one of the things that my approach allowed us to do is to create informal cohorts so that students would see this each other in their coursework that they saw. They met each other at orientation. You'd see each other in English. You'd see each other in an art class or in a music class or whatever. And then also beyond enrollment, our work with living and learning programs with Residence Life to create these opportunities for students to, mm-hmm. live together and to study together. Yeah. That provides an enormous amount of support mm-hmm. for students. It's really helpful to see friendly faces in courses, to walk in and be like, oh, I recognize yeah. people. I see, I've you know, we met over the summer, to have people who can be your natural study right. buddies or who can give you notes if you miss class or are sick, who, you know, if you've missed something or you don't understand something that you could form a study group with. And also in some ways hold yourself accountable, because one of the things that for many students can be really different in college than in high school in the United States is they're now accountable to their own and their own showing up. No one's necessarily tracking whether or not right. taking attendance. Some schools, some faculty members might take attendance, but oftentimes you're in a class where you get the sense it doesn't matter whether or not I show up.
Wow.
And then you start to realize I don't need right. to show up. And people stop showing up. And then of course that directly impacts their grades and their ability to continue to show up at all.
Wow.
Having people that you know in class, having people in your residence hall who are in classes, who are, you know, you're eating lunch with you, or to be able to, you know, we're going to class. Are right. you coming with us? Or if you miss class, we missed you. Where mm-hmm. were you? That accountability from your classmates when you don't see it from your teachers is a really powerful motivator to be in class, to be accountable, to show up, and to be seen, to not
right.
be invisible.
Another thing I thought that you did that also I think enhanced that was pretty much you had people on track to graduate in 4 years. And I have heard a lot of stories of people that didn't get any guidance. They get to the end of that time and they've got 3 or 4 classes, which tax on an enormous amount of money after the end, just to get that piece of paper. They may have done all the coursework for the degree and they've got other things hanging out. And to me, you increase sort of the efficiency for its student-centered design. And college isn't always student-centered in its design.
Absolutely not. Think about how you may have seen your curriculum sheet, if you did have a no. curriculum sheet at all. Many students never mm-hmm. saw something like a curriculum sheet or a four-year plan. Many times the requirements, so one of the things I saw when I first started is that students didn't understand the requirements. They yeah. wanted to meet them. They didn't know what they were. And they felt like oftentimes those requirements were shifting or changing. They talk to one person and they get one story, and they talk to another person, wow. they get a different story. So one piece that we really move strongly on is creating 4-year yeah. plans, just changing how we presented mm-hmm. the information. Many times schools create curriculum plans that are organized by category as opposed to organized by quarters or semesters yeah. of time. And that leaves students at a disadvantage because they're not thinking about how to put those connections. They don't know how to braid the classes right. together. So they start thinking, I got to take all my general educations and then I take right. my major. I
heard that.
Or they do other things that don't understand how the courses mm-hmm. get offered, that there's certain cadence of course offerings. Classes only get offered in fall or yeah. some classes only get offered every other year. For example, and if that course has a prerequisite, what the impact is on your enrollment, if you don't get that course that's a prerequisite in, you're not going to get into that next course. And if there's any kind of difficulty in the cadence or offerings, it can really set people back a number of years. I was working in areas that were very much like that, where there was a very strong structure, very strong cadence. Courses were offered in only certain sequences. There were strong prerequisites. If you didn't get into this course, we're not getting the next course. So really changing the layout of how the curriculum was distributed. Getting that 4-year plan in front of faculty and in front of students to change the conception of, yes, we ideally want students to meet these categories, but we also have to organize them in some semblance of time, because that is how students will experience them. And students need to see what that 4-year plan really looks like and get access to that immediately. That needs to be transparent. None of that was on our website. We had no information available to students. It was like Kafka's quest to be able to figure out what the requirements were.
I think in a lot of places that may not have changed. So do you think that, and I mean, you can bring this up later, but I think if you're out there and say you're headed back to school or to school for the first time, is that a request you think that people could bring to their guidance counselor and say, look, I want to break this down? And
absolutely. I would 100% encourage anyone who's thinking about enrolling to out the gate, ask for 4-year plan.
Yeah.
Ask where they are. Where are they on your website?
So should they be at this point?
Show me the handbook.
Yeah.
At this point, the conversation about transparency into degree requirements has been going on for decades. And any school that doesn't currently have their curriculum transparently online is at a real disadvantage in terms of enrolling students and being able to help those students meet the requirements. And it's very reasonable to go to your guidance counselor and ask for that information if it's not available online, or even if it is online, to say, can you walk me through this 4-year plan? I see this template. Let me see how it applies to my situation. Right. Because you may have transfer credit, you may have testing credit, you may have other situations that impact what courses are available to you and when you can take things. Guidance counselors can also be helpful to spot when there may be a case for you to make a petition, to change a requirement. You may, for example, have courses that you've completed elsewhere that you think are not meeting the requirement, but may be able to meet a requirement.
Okay.
If your administrators decide
be an advocate.
It may take, looking at the syllabus or some of the materials.
Well, I'm asking you this also because
from the course.
The actual statistics on the number of college counselors at the college level, and I presume also we're talking about setting up this plan also if you're in an associate's degree program, right?
Any program.
But the
number
of counselors to students, that ratio is in college 1,000 to 1. So I think this is really insider information for those of you out there that you're going to have to capture the attention of that very busy counselor. But this is where being an advocate is very important, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you are going to school is an expensive proposition. And whether you have a scholarship or tuition assistance or other help to make it happen, it's still a huge investment in your time. It's a huge investment in your resources, your energy, your aspiration, your future. So certainly it's absolutely important to acknowledge that you deserve that attention, that the lack of resources out there is not your fault.
No, and colleges aren't even necessarily on your side sometimes in terms of being efficient, because I do know people who feel that the college held on to them with these extra degree requirements and could have forestalled that, and it was just more income for them.
I think that's understandable. I think that's absolutely understandable, and it may be that was on purpose, as you said, to hang on for extra tuition. I would say oftentimes I saw it not as on purpose, but just as neglect or
I'm sure it is, but I do think in this particular instance, it did seem very intentional. And I am just saying that because I feel like everyone out there deserves a very cold eye view of what's going on. We can't afford just to trust, you know? And so I just want to make sure that, you know, you're trying to create that tight schedule for yourself. That is a great benefit. So I wonder if we can just sort of turn to what you did with like cohorts and study buddies and how we can encourage people to enter school and look for those partners in their education, because that seemed to increase people's ability to graduate.
Absolutely. And I think it's really the human relationship. You know, having somebody, who is walking alongside you, who, is a resource, a source of support and encouragement, that can move us through some really difficult times in life. Not just in school, but in all kinds of, difficult times, having resources, friends, mentors, building that village around yourself is so important. And school is a really critical time when that's true. I will mention, before we get into the buddy system, that one additional resource that we put a lot of energy into at Ohio State in the spirit of the curriculum requirement transparency is automated degree audits, so that students could pull their own requirement list that was customized to their class, what they have taken. Students often, you know, have historically had access to their transcripts, but their transcripts haven't always been organized by category of requirement. It doesn't have that nice, delicious green check mark that you're looking for. And having a clear-cut student audit was one of those things that really we found helped student awareness. And helped students also advocate, because when they saw classes not meeting requirements, they could take that to their guidance counselor, their academic counselor, faculty or department, and have them take another look at it. But we also use that degree audit within the buddy system to talk about student course planning. So I mentioned that I set up cohorts coming out of orientation. That I did that for students so that they would just magically see people in their courses that they had already met at orientation, and they'd have that built-in community. And in the first quarter of their enrollment, one of the courses they took was with me, helping them navigate setting up their future set of courses, where no longer was I going to be sitting there registering them for everything. They now needed to make those decisions and register for themselves. And one strategy that I strongly encourage is to meet with people that you already enjoy taking courses with, people who are in your major or pre-major, and look at, you got to be you and look at your coursework that you want to take. But at the same time, it's also something that you can do for yourself is to arrange to take courses with people that you know, so that you can walk in the door with a study buddy intact, with a group of people that you already want to take or already enjoy meeting with, who may live on your floor, or who you may be commuting with, and or if you don't have that ability to, on the very first day of class, be looking around the classroom and deciding, who do I want to be friends with for this for this term? I don't have to be friends with them for the rest of my life, but who do I want to make friends with? Who can I reach out to and connect with? And to set yourself up for success. Do not be afraid to sit where you want to sit in the classroom. I often found for myself sitting in the front of the classroom was a good call. I was less distracted. I could more easily focus.
I have to do that. I have ADHD. So I must do that.
Exactly. So you got to advocate for yourself and feel, you know, some people prefer to sit in the back, and that's fine, but figure out where you succeed, find your strong suit, and to move from your strengths. So there are many fields that maybe aren't my strength. I've been told a lot of times in my life, you're not very good at math. But nevertheless, there are requirements in your academic program that you need to get through, and that are important for your field. And you don't have to do it together by yourself, doing it together, having the study buddies, and also looking at how you're messaging to yourself, because it doesn't help me to message to myself, I'm not good at math. If that's my mantra going through that math class, that is what I will see. If I can instead come back with, but I'm good with communications, I enjoy building relationships, I can advocate for my own success by going to tutor, by forming a study group, by utilizing the office hours, by taking advantage of any study sessions that may be offered, I can use the strengths that I have of organization and tenacity and commitment to become better at math and be able to get through courses and get through things that I might not always love, but that are part of my course of study.
Yeah.
And to change the way I message it to myself, to look for the connection instead of like assuming it doesn't have any connection, to look for the connections it might have. So I might not love math. If I love photography, there's a lot of math in photography. If I love music, there's a lot of math in music. If I love physics, there's a lot of math in that too.
I listened to the Huberman Lab podcast, not to reference another podcast, but I just have to here. And just if you're interested in how your brain works, it's going to be a wonderful podcast to listen to. But in talking about learning, you're really... what you're recounting here is actually a great way to also keep your spirits up, basically, as you go through your coursework, is talking to yourself in this way and looking at the challenges you might have. I think Andrew Huberman talked about actually telling himself he was going to learn to love the classes that he hated. And he just started to experiment with talking to himself that way. And at the end, he said those ended up being the classes that he enjoyed the most, which I thought was really wild, right? So how you talk to yourself makes a big difference in, you know, it's a lot of classes and you don't want to just grit your teeth the whole time. That's hard. I can't grit my teeth for that long. I can try.
Right.
But so...
well, and there's no reason that you should really, that the preponderance of coursework should be delightful. You know, look for those courses of study that are mostly going to speak to your strength.
And just to step back for a minute and just to sort of reinforce what you said about group learning together. I went back to school about 10 years ago and learned a bunch of software programs dealing with the I think it was the Adobe Creative Suite, it was called then, but it was for, so I learned Dreamweaver and Photoshop, and I was a single mom and I was kind of coming in to the city and going out. And I realized pretty quickly that most of my class was, they were learning faster than I was. And I looked around and I realized it's because they were spending time together. And so their learning curve was much faster. So don't hesitate to do what Evelyn is recommending here, is use group study opportunities. They can really help you in some situations. I know not in all situations. I know that's not true, but it is true that you make a mistake and you're working with four people. Four people have now learned about that mistake, and now you're going to progress much faster.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everyone's going to hear a little something different in class or pick things up just ever so slightly. So if you can, you know, compound your knowledge with other people, it really is just project-based learning, doing things together, makes a huge difference. Talking things through. Oftentimes in classes, we may not have enough time to really talk ourselves through information, and group study sessions really are a great place to truly learn something for the long term. To really understand something, you need to be able to explain it to somebody else. You know that you really get it if you can get somebody else to get it. And so even if you think that you don't need other people in class, oftentimes you'll find that your learning is enhanced by helping other people out in class, because it really does deepen your knowledge.
That's so true. We learn when we're helping other people. This, it really does reinforce. That's a great point. I hadn't considered that, but that is very true. Well, I like the fact that also Ohio State's a very big school, right?
It is one of the largest universities in the United States. Undergraduate population can fluctuate somewhere between 50 and 60,000.
Wow. So if you're entering a big school, and I know I started at Berkeley, so it was huge. And I entered a program that was just 40 students. And so it ended up being that. So what you're talking about is sort of trying for all of us to create that small school in the big school.
Exactly so. Just to your point, I mean, that was essentially the diagnosis that we had was, you know, the strength of Ohio State in being very large and having lots of different programs of study. That's wonderful. That's really tremendous. On the other hand, it left students feeling invisible and, you know, that they didn't have a connection to another person on campus. And the research that we were looking at that time showed that that was the most meaningful impact that someone could have, is to feel a connection to someone on campus. Wow. So we wanted to really build programs that gave people an opportunity to build that connection, whether that was in their residence hall, whether that was in their classroom, whether that was with a faculty member or with another student, that anything that we could do to break the university up into smaller spaces, to make intentional learning communities, to make living and learning programs, to make interdisciplinary programs that connect people along their interests, that was going to really make dramatic impacts without having to invest in a lot more infrastructure, that we could make those impacts through cohorting and enrollment management techniques, through partnership, and through a heightened sense of best practice in pedagogy.
Okay, so I think we've covered here, if I could just briefly summarize, we're talking about starting out with a plan, trying to get cooperation with whatever program you're in. It's 2 years, it's 1 year, you know, just whatever it is, if it's involved with more than one course, trying to get the coordination to know that you can finish on time, trying to work with other students once you're in the coursework so that you have people to study with, people to take notes if you're out sick, you know, for you, but that whole cooperative bit about creating that small program in the big program is really going to help you stay in and help you at times when just doing it by yourself might maybe not be as fast and efficient. I mean, it might be.
Absolutely. And if I might just jump in there to say, this is uniquely relevant at this time because so many people are learning on their own online. And the completion rate of coursework online is very low.
I didn't know that. Okay.
And part of that is because there's no community. Mm-hmm. People don't have those connections. They hit the first barrier and they quit. Or they get distracted and they quit. And so whether you're in a degree granting program or you're signing up to do a micro-credential online, these kinds of practices of building a community around yourself are really important for your completion. So what that can look like in an online setting is participating in code challenges or looking at support groups that may be around those micro-credentialing classes. Meetup groups that may be related to professional development groups that may be related to that micro-credentialing attainment. whether those are in cybersecurity, whether those are in more creative mm-hmm. fields. There are tremendous amount of professional development associations, meetup groups, and other informal learning spaces that you can access on Twitter, on LinkedIn, and other spaces where social media can really help you tap into a community that you may not know exists. And it may not be in your local space, but it is available to you. And you can create some really meaningful relationships with people who are on shared goals.
Yeah, that's terrific. Thank you so much, Evelyn. That's very helpful and helpful to know about, to remember the online atmosphere in which a lot of us are in, or just because we don't seem to be through with COVID yet. And we may have times when we just need to be more isolated. So, you know.
And there's been a huge growth in the online mm-hmm. learning community. I think that we're going to continue to see virtual learning, online learning, really expanding opportunities with or without mm-hmm. COVID. We're seeing universities really lean into online learning, virtual learning to augment or support in-person learning. We also see a growth of the Coursera's, Udacity's, yeah. Udemy's, and other online training providers. Even YouTube, right, is full of online training and tutorials that are available to people. And the communities that you can tap into to help you do whatever it is that you want to do, whether it's, you know, learning woodworking, sewing, or, you know, something like a cybersecurity or boot camp type approach, degrees and lifelong learning. It all takes a village. It really is yeah. something that isn't best undertaken individually, but is best taken on. You can learn something from everyone. You can teach something to everyone.
Well, thank you. And that's a great place to stop today. Evelyn has provided some resources, and I'll be putting those in the notes and on the blog. But I just want to thank you for coming on today, Evelyn. It's really helpful for people to know that network is really important. Human communication, the human side of learning, or human structure of learning, is very important. It's totally free. And all you have to do is get into class and get into school and start asking.
Absolutely. For the most part, human skills, that's where work is. That's where the juicy work is going. Technical skills are things that we can always learn and grow within. But learning those technical skills within the human environment, that's going to give it more traction. Those projects, that context, that meaning, the why we're mm-hmm. doing something, that's going to make it more, it's going to make it easier for you to remember. It's going to make it easier for you to apply it in new context. And it's more satisfying as you go through the process. Doing things on your own. What is the saying? If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I think in education, it's really about going far and always about going together.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. If you like what you've heard today, please comment, like, and share it. And subscribe for more great interviews and ways to save money on college and trade schools, and even find free training. And don't forget to look me up. I'm over on TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. Take care.